Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. As of February 15th, every public school in Iowa is required to offer 100% in-person learning for students who choose that option. The vast majority of districts were already offering 100% in-person learning, but in January, Governor Reynolds signed legislation to make that uniform that forced a number of districts, primarily in Iowa's largest cities, to make the change. Most of those districts dropped their hybrid option and now offer 100% virtual or 100% in-person learning. Des Moines Public Schools is the largest district in the state. More than 20,000 students, about 65% of the district, are now in school 5 days a week. Thomas Ahart is the superintendent of Des Moines Public Schools. I recorded this interview with him on Tuesday. Superintendent Ahart, thank you so much for being here.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me, Charity.
Now, Des Moines Public Schools require all students and employees to wear masks during your hybrid model. I know that social distancing was a big part of your strategy, and I know that's one of the biggest concerns with so many students returning. What are classrooms like now in Des Moines?
Well, they're a lot more full than they were before. So physical distancing, meaningful physical distancing, is really just been rendered impossible. So the mask wearing is that much more important.
I have had people say, well, I don't understand if, 35% or 40% of students aren't in school, why can't there be physical distancing? So explain to us a little bit some of the juggling that you had to do to get students back in classrooms full time.
Well, with offering two instructional modalities, an in-person modality and a virtual modality, we need staff to do both of those things. And so it's not as if we're bringing 65% of our students back and with 100% of our staff. So, we still have a significant portion of our instructional staff instructing virtually to serve the other roughly 35% of the students who have opted for remote learning. So we just don't have the number of adult individuals serving our students in person because they've had to be they've had to change their assignments to meet the needs of those who are learning virtually. In a typical classroom in a typical year, there's nowhere near the level of physical distancing that's recommended by the CDC. So even if you cut the number of bodies in half, you still really aren't reaching those physical distancing targets. So even if you put 2/3 of your students into a classroom that would normally have 100% of the students in that class, you still really can't achieve significant physical distancing relative to COVID-19 spread.
Your first day of full-time in-person learning was delayed by weather, and a lot of districts were. So I know that it's probably too soon, really, to know how things are going virus-wise. But other than that, how are things going?
They're going well. Our staff and all of us have been just starving to have our students back in school, and we're hoping to have different circumstances when we would return to 5 days a week, because with the multiple COVID-19 variants that are out there spreading and the still lack of accessible vaccine has put a strain, on the comfort level that many of our staff have in returning to what feels like the normal routine, if you will. That aside, principals, teachers, other support staff have been, really prepared. And I think started things off very, very smoothly on what ended up being Wednesday rather than Monday because of the extreme cold temperatures. And aside from having to re-choreograph some some parts of the day. That's a term one of my principals used the other day, the choreography required to ensure that groups of students aren't passing one another in the hallway and, you know, getting too many people in the cafeteria and, you know, the challenges like that. Things have been going very, very well.
The timing of this change, of course, confused a lot of people, frustrated a lot of people, because with vaccines becoming available to teachers, the change didn't allow time for teachers to actually get vaccinated, and the state didn't mandate or facilitate vaccination clinics for teachers. So I know that you've been working hard to get your teachers vaccinated. How is it going?
Well, actually, it was going quite well. We've been very fortunate to create a really fruitful partnership with Mercy One, and we've had two vaccination clinics thus far. We were supposed to have a third and final one this past Saturday, but with some holdups in the supply chain, Mercy One was not able to receive the vaccines that it was expecting prior to Saturday. So we've rescheduled that for this upcoming Saturday. So by that time, we should have provided a vaccine for virtually all of the staff in Des Moines Public Schools that wanted one. So we've delivered at least 1,700 shots in arms thus far, and have several hundred more to go this upcoming Saturday. And then with a few exceptions of folks that weren't in a position to get the shot this next Saturday for various reasons, we should pretty much have all of our staff that has contact with students and who wanted a shot with the first dose of vaccine. And in fact, we'll have well over 500 that will also be getting their second shot this upcoming Saturday.
Des Moines Public Schools has been very carefully tracking COVID in its schools. Many districts have been tracking COVID very carefully and reporting those numbers openly. Not all districts have, but so we do know from research, we do know that spread does occur in schools just as it does in other parts of the community. What have you learned this year about COVID in your schools?
Well, we feel very confident that masking has helped significantly, and we don't have enough data yet because of the 5 days a week only being, you know, a few days in, but we're confident that the physical distancing that we were able to employ when we were in a hybrid, along with the other mitigation strategies that we have in place, certainly provided a higher level of safety than a lot of other places. Prior to the return to 5 days a week, I think we had a per capita, you know, fewer student and staff infections than virtually anywhere else in the state in the K-12 realm. We're hopeful. I mean, we have folks, you know, really staying on top of our mitigation efforts. Like I said, there's not a lot we can do about physical distancing, so we're going to stay on top of it. But we do anticipate that spread will become more of an issue, certainly than it was when we were in hybrid or in virtual. So, you know, what I've learned is that there's probably some things that we're doing now that will continue to serve us even when things feel like they're back to normal. I think we have some protocols for sanitation and hand washing that will continue to reinforce even after the CDC says maybe we don't need to anymore. And I think all of us have a better appreciation for how good we had it prior to the pandemic.
Has the influx of students changed any of your contact tracing procedures or anything like that?
No, not at present. Now, we're bracing for having to assign more people to contact tracing if numbers start to tick up, because we have limited capacity to do that at this point in time. You know, the number of new cases that we get, student cases that we've gotten on a daily basis, For the last week or so has ranged anywhere from, you know, between 3 and 8 cases reported, which is something that we can stay on top of. But if there's a significant uptick and it's an uptick in a particular building, that's when we really have to focus more resources. But at this point in time, things have stayed relatively calm and spread relatively evenly around the district.
Educating students in a pandemic is extremely expensive. You've had to do so much to make sure that students can get online and get devices for all the students and make all of the changes that most districts in the state have had to make. At the same time, you've been at odds with Governor Reynolds in a lot of ways, and that seems to carry with it some financial penalties as well in some of the policies that she's been making. So how are you doing fiscally?
Fiscally, COVID aside, we had a budget challenge in front of us in terms of unspent spending authority moving into this year. And frankly, that's been something that we've had to consistently address really over the last 10 years. When supplemental state aid is not keeping up with the cost of inflation, and you have relatively flat growth in enrollment, that puts you in basically a structural deficit. So we were planning on, you know, having a challenging year moving into next year, trying to cut about $14 million from our budget. We had cut about $14 million the year prior. And then this year, with a number of students, you know, quite a number of students, especially pre-K and kindergarten students that we were expecting, having taken what we're calling a redshirt year, you know, deciding to wait until the following year, we had a significant and unanticipated drop in enrollment, just as a lot of districts did around the state. So that puts additional stress on next year's budget. So we certainly are not better off because of COVID.
We're going to have to pause here just for a moment. I'm talking with Des Moines Public Schools Superintendent Thomas Ahart. We're checking in with Iowa schools following the implementation of the state mandate that all districts offer 100% in-person learning. We will continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.
In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we're checking in with Iowa schools now that all districts are required to offer 100% in-person learning. With me now is Des Moines Public Schools Superintendent Thomas Ahart. We recorded this conversation on Tuesday, and before the break, we were talking about the budgetary strain created for the district by the pandemic, and you have received some relief money. Has that offset those additional costs?
We did get some relief money, a little over $8 million early this summer, late this spring, which frankly we had already expended. So we had to make some additional investments in computer technology. And the biggest challenge, frankly, was connecting about 5,000 students to the internet, which came at no small cost. So by the time we got that first relief dollars from the federal government, we had more than expended the equivalent of that amount. So we have another large chunk of money coming from the federal government, about $41 million to DMPS. And that will continue to keep us in PPE for the remainder of the year. And probably, you know, we're anticipating that we'll have some need for PPE moving into next year. We've purchased air medical grade air purification systems that we have in each of our schools' nurses' offices, as well as the isolation rooms that we've created in each of our schools, so that we can isolate a suspected case of COVID to prevent further spread. And then a lot of our HVAC systems can't handle the higher grade filters that are required to filter out COVID-19. We have millions of dollars of investments that either we've made or will be, are in the process of making here over the next several months and potentially even a couple of years to try to keep conditions as safe as possible.
So a lot of challenges on the horizon financially. I also want to ask you, Iowa has always been a local control state. If you go to the State Department of Education and you look at their website, it says we are a local control state, and we've not been operating like a local control state for the last 10 or 11 months. And I know that, of course, your district has been at odds with the governor over that. What do you think the implications are for the future, for how schools operate in Iowa from this point on?
For Des Moines Public Schools, I'll speak to Des Moines specifically. Local control is really important for us, largely for two reasons. One, our size, and two, the diversity of the student population that we serve. Understandably, the legislature, when they promulgate new laws and the DE tries to implement those, they have in mind the typical Iowa school district, and the median size school district in Iowa is about 600 students. And so we're about 50 times bigger than that. And so things that make sense in a small district where maybe there's one or two buildings just don't translate into common sense application in a district that has nearly 70 school buildings. It's really difficult to have detailed rules and regulations at the state level play out equitably at the local level when there's so much variance from the smallest districts in the state to the largest district in the state. And so we're pretty uncomfortable with less local control, because there's just so much that we need to do to make things work in our context. And so the more flexibility we have, the more successful we can be, and the more equitably we can serve the students that we value so much.
Superintendent Ahart, thank you so much for talking with me, and stay well.
Thank you, Charity. You as well.
Des Moines Public Schools Superintendent Thomas Ahart. This hour, we're doing a check-in on Iowa's public schools. As of February 15th, all districts in the state are required to offer 100% in-person learning as an option for their students. And with me now is Iowa Public Radio reporter Grant Gerlach. Hello, Grant.
Hi, Charity.
Now, of course, we know that Des Moines is one of the districts that had to change in-person learning options because of the legislation. A number of other large districts transitioned earlier in February because they knew what was coming. Other districts, of course, had to make that change. What are some of the other districts that had to make the switch on February 15th?
Let's see. Urbandale had to make a switch. Dubuque had to make a switch. Some of these schools had to put it off because of the cold weather, but they've all made the switch by now.
All right. Iowa City Schools, too. I know that the Linmar district is kind of an unusual district because they had to offer 100% in-person learning. Somehow they're managing to offer 100% in-person learning, hybrid and online, which most districts absolutely cannot swing.
That's very unusual. Yeah.
So this change, of course, comes at almost exactly the same time as new guidelines from the CDC for school openings. Looking at those guidelines, what did we learn from that information?
Well, it was really interesting for these to come out the Friday before this Iowa law took effect. And it's different from what the CDC has said in the past because in some ways it's a lot more specific. It's the kind of matrix that we've seen some districts try to adopt. And it sort of proposes a phased-in approach for schools to take. that really emphasizes elementary students in particular being in person as much as possible, and also caution for middle and high school students. And it gives us some more specific numbers than they have in the past. So, for instance, if there is substantial or high transmission, which would be, it would has to do with the infection rate, elementary students, even if there's high transmission, they suggest students being at least in a hybrid model. That's if they can keep physical distancing and they suggest requiring masks. At a substantial rate that they define, middle and high schools could be hybrid, but if there's a high transmission rate, they want those schools to be in virtual learning. And part of that's because with the older students, they know that there's more likely to be illness that can become more severe, and they've seen more illness among those older students.
So, of course, as I was just talking to Superintendent Ahart about these large districts that had to switch to 100% in-person learning across the board, K through 12, they cannot guarantee social distancing, which is, of course, what the CDC is saying is an important element of this.
Right. And so this is a big caveat with a lot of what they're recommending. It's if you can do the social distancing and the masking, and they suggest, you know, improved ventilation. It's something a lot of schools like Des Moines can't do. They're doubling students in a lot of these classrooms. And instead of having maybe 10 or 12 students, they have maybe 30 students in some cases. And they can't keep them 6 feet apart. They wouldn't be able to fit everyone in there. They have, in Des Moines, they've put a lot of emphasis in trying to increase ventilation in the school buildings. They have very old buildings in many cases. They are requiring masks, but the CDC wants to see all of these things going on, not just one or two. So it's not the kind of protection and mitigation that the CDC is recommending.
So it's been a year since the beginning of the pandemic, and we have had students in Iowa physically in schools since August in different districts, but we have very little data on school-based COVID spread in Iowa. Why is that?
That's because the state isn't collecting it the way it is collecting, you know, the positive tests throughout the community. They're not breaking all this out for schools. And schools themselves can choose for themselves how they want to report that data to the community. So some have created public dashboards, others have not, and they're maybe reporting cases in announcements that they're making, or sometimes they're not even doing that at all, except for the students that are directly impacted if they need to quarantine or need to know about a classmate. So the responses have been all across the board. What we know is that there are cases happening, especially when we had the surge last fall. There were many schools that had to request to go online, but there are cases happening in schools. There are cases among students and teachers. You just have to kind of go case by case to find what those numbers are like. Each week, Polk County reports on COVID cases in schools. So just to give you an idea of what it looks right now, this most recent report that covers last week reported around 1,000 students and staff in quarantine. That's for not just Des Moines schools, but sort of the schools in the whole metro area. So there are still cases that are cropping up for sure.
And we know that districts have been working hard to get their teachers vaccinated. Of course, no districts have teachers who've had both doses of the vaccine yet, although that is coming soon. And the larger districts have been struggling to get their entire workforce, everybody who wants a vaccine, access to one. What do we know about teacher vaccination?
Well, there's been a lot of progress that I think people are pretty pleased with. Des Moines, for instance, they have around 5,000 teachers and staff members, which is a big group to try to account for when it comes to vaccines. They said that they're probably at a half or a little more that have had their first dose of a COVID vaccination. That doesn't mean 100% protection. It's not full protection, but at least we know that from these vaccines that there's some effectiveness, even if you've had just the one dose. So I think that's gives some peace of mind to teachers. One elementary teacher that I talked to said she felt a lot better coming back fully in person because she'd had her first dose. And she has 18 students in her classroom, and they're not going to be able to stay 6 feet apart. So considering that in her classroom, she can't meet all those measures of COVID mitigation. At least she's had partial protection against the virus.
I spoke to Superintendent Ahart on Tuesday, just as news was breaking about legislation advancing in the Senate that says that school board members could be removed from office and superintendents could face professional sanctions for violating state law. This is legislation that seems to be specifically crafted to punish the Des Moines public school system. What are you keeping your eye on with this legislation?
Yeah, there's no other district that would come under this law at this point. You know, so like the lawmakers that introduced it said that, well, going forward, it wouldn't be just about Des Moines, but going back, because this bill would take effect retroactively, it targets Des Moines. So the school board members, it would be pretty easy to recall them. And Superintendent Ahart in particular could have his license revoked if someone issued a complaint to the Iowa Board of Educational Examiners for the actions that the district took, because at the beginning of the year, Des Moines Schools was suing the state over the law that was passed requiring at least 50% in-person learning. That's the effect that it was after the governor issued her proclamation over the summer. And so they were waiting to see if they might have a court injunction that would pause that law from taking effect for them or might overturn it. And in the meantime, they started virtually. Well, they lost that court case, and after that were, you know, in violation of the state guidelines that were in place. So this law looks back and could create some additional consequences for the school board and the superintendent based on those decisions back then. And there were a couple school board members who were part of the subcommittee that happened this week. And, you know, they asked lawmakers to not take this kind of retribution against Des Moines, but sit down and talk with them about the decisions they made and how they came to them. And the lawmakers in the subcommittee said they were open to that, but they still wanted to put some stronger consequences in place for decisions that violate state law.
All right. So we'll keep an eye on that to see how it progresses. Grant Gerlach, thank you so much for talking with me.
Good to be with you.
Iowa Public Radio's Grant Gerlach reports on education in Iowa, and IPR's health reporter Natalie Krebs is here now. Hello, Natalie.
Hi, Charity.
And Natalie, early in the pandemic, we didn't have a lot of information on case counts for young people under the age of 18 in Iowa. Part of that was because a lot of young people weren't really at risk because they were all at home. Part of that was because with limited testing, we weren't really testing young people in Iowa. But what are we seeing now as far as case counts for people 18 and under in the state?
Yeah, we still don't have a ton of information on, you know, kids testing positive for the virus. And you're right, we're still not testing a lot of kids, but we're testing more. But, you know, the state site is reporting, as you know, that about 4% of people ages 0 to 17 have tested positive for the virus. So that's one of the smallest categories. To put that into perspective, the next category, 18 to 29, that number is 27% of that age group has tested positive for the virus in the last 7 days.
Well, and we do have a snapshot between January 29th and February 21st, 2,750 new cases among Iowans under the age of 18. So we could see those numbers changing in the next couple of months, and I'm sure people will be looking at that very closely. But speaking of numbers, Natalie, changes in how the state is reporting numbers has caused a whole lot of confusion and some real alarm in the past week. Can you just briefly tell me what's going on?
Yeah, so the state switched the way it's calculating that percent positivity rate, which is one of those metrics that officials use to determine kind of how widespread the virus is. So previously they were doing that, you know, by individuals. So they were counting each individual test, taking number of total positive tests for individuals, dividing that over total tests for individuals. In the last week, they've switched that over to positive test total. So they're just basically taking, you know, all the positive tests and dividing it by the total number of tests to get that number. So that basically means it comes down to, you know, people who test negative multiple times in like the last 14 days, all of those negative tests are included now, as opposed to before that would have just been one test, you know, tied to one individual. So that's lowered the percent positivity rate basically. And so now we're only looking at, you know, a 14-day past average of about 4%, and that's the same for the 7-day test positivity rate is about 4%.
That sounds like we're comparing apples to oranges then in looking at test positivity in the state. So it's going to be hard to really get a feel for how that is changing over time. And then we also saw a spike in the number of positive cases reported that made it look like things had gotten a whole lot worse in Iowa. What happened there?
Yeah, and so that's, again, just that changeover. So before, Iowa was reporting, you know, the number of cases, positive cases tied to individuals. And then, you know, last week they switched over to reporting the number of total positive tests. So again, going back, you know, some people have tested positive more than once. There were a couple thousand, about over 4,000 more positive tests than positive individuals. Like, that sort of gave the false idea that all of a sudden there was this huge spike in positive cases when that's not the case. We're looking at positive tests that have happened over months and months of time. So Iowa did not have actually like a spike in new cases reported in the last, you know, week or so.
So do you feel like you can get accurate data now?
I do, yeah. You know, the state is still reporting the number of individuals who are testing positive, and I still use that number to report like the statistics on a daily basis. Also, you know, this number of calculating, you know, positive tests that the state switched to, that's something the CDC does recommend. That's something other states do. That's a technique that they use for monitoring, you know, other infectious diseases like the flu. So, you know, we still can get kind of an accurate count of what's going on in the state.
Okay. Well, Natalie, everybody should follow you on Twitter and follow Iowa Public Radio to keep up to date with those numbers. Natalie Krebs, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Charity.
This is Talk of Iowa.
The way Iowans consume news has changed a lot since the coronavirus pandemic hit in 2020. But people here still need to know what's going on in the state every day. What are leaders saying?
The virus isn't going away until we have a vaccine.
How are medical professionals reacting, and how is it affecting hospital staff and schools?
Those weekends where you are on the phone and sending emails and, you know, dealing with people with a very emotional issue has been really hard.
I'm Clay Masters. In 2021, Iowa Public Radio is starting a podcast called Here First. It's a quick daily show for your work week that catches you up on state news as you begin your day. Get analysis from IPR's team of reporters.
Most of the improvement in the unemployment picture comes from more than 90,000 Iowans no longer looking for work.
Find out when high-profile politicians are in the state.
Back at the state fair!
Learn about what's going on in state government and discover Iowans you might not hear about otherwise.
This is the first time I've spoken with a woman without documents who's also unafraid of sharing her story on the radio.
Subscribe to Iowa Public Radio's Here First wherever you get your podcasts.